Well, he's back. That's right. Lon Milo Duquette with us. His many works include The Wiser Book of Horror and the Occult and so many others, Angels, Demons, and Gods. We're going to talk about all of them, and his latest book is called Son of Chicken Kabbalah. And he is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Lon Milo Duquette back with us. Lon is one of the most respected, entertaining, esoteric writers in the world. He's also an award-winning singer, songwriter, and recording artist whose musical career has spanned more than 50 years. Internationally recognized authority on ceremonial magic, tarot, the Kabbalah, and has written extensively about the life and works of the controversial poet and magician Aleister Crowley. He is a 32nd degree Mason, oh boy, and we'll talk about that, and is currently the U.S. Deputy Grand Master of the Ordo Templi Orientis, a 100-year-old magical society once led by Crowley. Lon, welcome back. It's been about a year on the radio show.
It has, George. It's good to be back.
And how are you, sir?
I'm fine. I'm well.
Excellent. You sound good. You sound chipper and wide awake.
That's an illusion.
Hey, I always thought Aleister Crowley was evil. Tell me about him.
Well, he wouldn't have minded if you thought he was evil, because he sort of cultivated an evil reputation. But he did so in a way that sort of weeded out the people that weren't, I guess, subtle enough or brave enough or spiritually courageous enough to know what he was really talking about. So he took almost fiendish delight in scaring anyone who was easily scared. And because he didn't want a bunch of superstitious people or blind followers, so he just cultivated sort of a very, very dark reputation.
Was he well known during his time, Lon?
Well, he was, and he was sort of conscious of a public image, and he did it for a number of reasons. First of all, he was a bit of a exhibitionist as a personality type, but he also had a side job that he worked at almost from his college age till when he died. He was, I guess we could call him a secret agent or a disinformation. He was an intelligence officer for British intelligence. And kind of part of his cover was the fact that he was this wandering, highly eccentric poet and provocateur. He was instrumental in bringing the United States into World War I on England's side rather than on Germany's side. And he worked closely with or at least in the same cities at the same time with Sidney Reilly, the famous spy that James mm-hmm. Bond was
styled after. That's right. What do you think Aleister would be doing today with social networking the way it is now, if he had access to Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that?
Oh, he would be so dangerous and so entertaining. And and at the same time, I think his what we would call his spiritual message would have a greater opportunity to reach the very people that he wanted to reach. It was very hard in his day, and his day being turn of the 20th century, right up. Just past World War II, it was sort of hard for him to get his serious message out, with literally having to publish things and to get publishers and to find publishers and to get the newspapers to talk about him and to get well known. If Crowley had a Facebook page, we'd all be in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get into a lot of things, including angels and demons with you. But you've got a new work out called Son of Chicken Kabbalah, which is the basis of your other book, Chicken Kabbalah. First of all, for a lot of people who don't know what that is, explain what the Kabbalah is.
Well, it's a serious system of spiritual development, which for centuries was practiced pretty much exclusively by Jewish mystics and magicians who used it as sort of a perpetual background meditation on the structure of consciousness. It's actually the foundation of most of the Western mystical arts that we think of today, like astrology and alchemy and ritual magic. And even the fortune-telling arts like tarot and numerology, they're all Kabbalah-based. So it's based on a couple of very ancient texts. And even today, we can't be sure if the texts are a bit corrupted. But it's more of, instead of a school of learning and stuff, it's more along the lines of the how the Tao or the Tao Te Ching is the foundation of all Eastern of all Eastern thought. The Kabbalah is the foundation of the Western way of organizing one's brain, I guess.
I thought it was spelled with a K. You've got it with a Q.
Yeah. Actually, Kabbalah in Hebrew is spelled with the Hebrew equivalent of a Q. But a lot of Kabbalistic literature that was in the forefront of Kabbalistic studies for a couple hundred years, came out of Europe, first in Spain and Portugal, and then Germany, and so they spelled it sounded more phonetically correct to use a K and a double B to spell it.
Isn't this what Madonna follows?
Yes,
that's what I thought.
She follows a branch of it, there's a broad spectrum of techniques, practices, and meditations that are Kabbalah based, for years it was mostly the exclusive field of interest to very very intellectual Jewish mystics, and they used it to debate and to pick things apart and dissect mostly the scriptures using Kabbalistic principles. What they do is use the mystic powers of the Hebrew alphabet, which they consider to be sort of an alphanumeric code of the mind of God. But they use that alphanumeric code to transfer words and letters and sentences into mathematical formulas, and then certain things were represented by these letters displayed mathematical harmonies, and they sort of saw the mind of God as being a big mathematical code. And so it was a very serious and intellectual field of study, but in the same way that Eastern mystics kind of strip away everything in their minds, that they strip away all the things that they're not until they hit this wonderful, smooth sort of what we'd call nothing, but it's not nothing, it's everything. But they'd hit that smooth point once they remove everything that they aren't. What's left is what they are, and that thing that is left is exactly the big universal thing, too. Kabbalists do the same thing, only they connect everything in the universe with everything else until there's nothing left. And they hit that same state of consciousness. The big fullness and the big emptiness is exactly the same thing.
Lon, you've got about, what, 17 books out now?
Yeah, I think the new book's number 18.
18 now?
Yeah.
And I understand Son Of, because this is a sequel to Chicken Kabbalah, but what in the heck is this title? Son of Chicken Kabbalah.
Well,
you got to explain that.
Okay. It's the 17 years ago, I wrote the Chicken Kabbalah. And I did it in such a way that, Kabbalah can be painfully boring, especially if you're not familiar with those tools. And so people get discouraged. So I've been teaching this in my Monday night class now for 41 years. So after trying to teach Kabbalah all this time, I found that it was easier to teach it if I got a little bit goofy about it.
Ah, okay. And a little humor, huh?
Yeah. So I invented this rabbi, this fictitious rabbi named Lamed Ben Clifford. And he's a literary device. I invented him just for the Chicken Kabbalah book. But I wanted to invent my own unorthodox authority to teach this Kabbalah in a kind of a lighthearted way. And oddly enough, this love of masquerade is a big, wonderful tradition in Jewish literature. But anyway, I'm not the first Kabbalist to use this literary device. But to tell you the truth, both my publisher, Weiser Books, and I were really surprised that the Chicken Kabbalah 17 years ago was so well received, and it sold so well ever since then. The Son of Chicken Kabbalah is kind of a long overdue continuation of the crazy rabbi's adventures. But this time, I actually have created three ritual degree initiation ceremonies that introduce and literally implant this Hebrew alphabet in a step-by-step way, kind of in the consciousness of the candidate or the reader. So instead of just sort of a textbook, it's actually a handbook of initiation and a handbook of self-initiation. And it's something that I did in China in 2016. I visited four times every 90 days. And I initiated using this this formula.
Interesting. Well, good luck with that. And of course, Lon's Facebook website basically is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Lon, you're a Freemason, and we hear all kinds of stories about Freemasons. Are you a good guy, or are you one of those evil ones?
Well, I'm sure there's good and evil people in every walk of life, and I would love to think myself as being a good person in whatever organization I belong to. So I'm a good Freemason from my point of view.
Well, that's good. That's good. Now, one of your books is called Angels, Demons, and Gods, and I want to talk about demons and angels for a moment, especially as we make this turn towards Thanksgiving and Christmas, which is always appropriate to do it with these times. When you wrote this book, tell me your theme of angels, demons, and gods of the new millennium.
Well, it's a series of seven magical essays that deal with the concepts of angels, angels and demons. In other words, it's spiritual entities that are metaphors, but you know, very, very real metaphors of aspects of consciousness. And the demonic aspects of consciousness would be imbalanced, imperfect, uncontrolled forces that we currently don't have under under intelligent control, and the angels being aspects of higher levels of consciousness. So it's like a cascading frequency of consciousness from Godhead, or the supreme consciousness, or whatever the consciousness of the big totality is that holds everything together, and all the way down to the broken, fragmented aspects of that consciousness, which would manifest, at least metaphorically, as demons or destructive spirits.
Let's talk about angels, that first portion of your book title. What are angels to you? Are they the biblical version, or are they something else?
Well, the biblical angel just literally just means messenger. So some every once in a while in Bible narratives they use the word angel, and they're just really talking about a person that's delivering a message of some kind, or an emissary from an authority figure. They were called angels, but the Kabbalah itemizes the or attempts to itemize the mind of God.
Mm-hmm.
And
if you can, I guess.
Well, they make an attempt. Of course, we can't wrap our meat brains around it, so they really have to do it in imagery and metaphors, and they dramatize things that are so abstract that they have no concrete image to assign to it. But look at it this way. There's the big totality of existence, okay? It's whatever the big whatever it is. And then as that manifests in the universe, we have universal forces. We have basic forces. We have fundamental forces. And in physics, one of those big forces is gravity. Okay, so we would look at the totality of existence as God, but we would look at gravity as one of God's archangels. Gravity, AL. You know, we could call an archangel gravity, AL. And then within that force of gravity, there are numerous, almost countless expressions of how gravity manifests on Earth.
Hold on for a second, Lon. We're at the break. We'll come back and talk about angels and then demons to see what people can do about this. Lon Milo Ducat with us, his latest book, Son of Chicken Kabbalah, or Kabbalah. And we will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Lon Milo Ducat with us. His latest book is called Son of Chicken Kabbalah, and we are talking about angels and demons right now and gods of the new millennium. These angels that you write about, Lon, are they good or bad?
I would say they're neutral.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's not so All much right. the spiritual entity that's bad, it's the magician that's either good or bad. So the I guess it's as simple as that.
What about the demon portion?
If you'd leave a piece of heavy machinery like an earth mover or a caterpillar or something. If you leave the keys in it and leave the engine running and just put it in gear and then get off of it and let it go uncontrolled all through town all night, it would be a very destructive, demonic, deadly, dangerous machine. But if you've got a man or a person on it that really knows how to run it and use it, and you can use it to clear land, help build a temple with it. But it all depends on whether it is under intelligent control. So you could call that a blind force that uncontrolled will discharge its power and energy just along the lines of least resistance. But when it's under intelligent control, it can be used for constructive or unharmful purposes.
But that doesn't explain if something's demonic, no matter what kind of control you might have over it. It's going to be something bad, isn't it?
Ultimately, it's an aspect of consciousness, and it's an aspect that we can't always follow the chain reaction of what's running it, and that's sort of what magic does. The art of magic sort of takes things into a quantum level, as far as what causes what effects. But the ultimately it's all an aspect of consciousness. And in a very real sense, but not always obviously so, in a very real sense, when a magician or an exorcist is brought in to control, to tame, to redirect, or to completely banish one of these demonic forces that seem to be manifesting in a person, or even in a building, ultimately the magician does the magic on himself or herself.
Why?
Because the magician more or less takes on, the magician first of all invokes the higher power. In other words, the magician can't just act on his or her own. The magician has to literally invoke deity, has to become one with deity, has to feel that what the magician is doing is in 100% total cooperation with the divine will of the universe. And so the magician is acting as a conduit to how things should actually be running properly in the universe. And so that gives the magician the authority to start making changes to redirect things on a lower level. So in a sense, what the magician is doing is expanding the magician's own consciousness to even include the dynamics of what is making the demon do that thing. And the magician purifies himself or herself. The magician readjusts himself or herself when they're in that expanded consciousness trance, I guess, if you will. And the magician fixing himself or herself in a sense fixes everything else in the neighborhood. Okay, and that's technically what is going on. But as far as the magician having to, in a sense, trick himself or herself into to getting to that state of mind, the magician treats everything pretty much as an objective possession, as an objective demon that that he is actually going toe to toe with. But the magician can't do that unless the magician is a pure, unobstructed conduit directly from God.
Has the magician sometimes gone toe-to-toe with a demon and lost?
Well, ultimately, no. But temporarily, all the time.
Yeah.
Because the magician doesn't always succeed in being that unobstructed conduit.
Are you an exorcist, Lon?
Yeah, I guess you would say that. Well, I've served in that capacity on occasion, but only when it seems like it's something that is actually part of my own personal great work to do. I don't, hang a shingle out in front of my store. I don't put an ad on YouTube.
Have you ever exorcised somebody, though?
Oh, yes.
Tell us what happened.
A number of years ago, it's probably close to 15 years ago, I got a call from my brother, who was kind of a holy man, or he's a Reiki master, and one of his clients was a sister, a nun, who was like the mother superior of a Catholic girls' school, and I won't name the school because it's.
I understand.
She first called him to see if he could come cleanse the school itself, because there had been such a rash of misfortunate events that took place at the school. And he says, "Well, I don't exercise, but my brother does." And he's a bishop, and that sort of perked up the sister's ears, because in Catholic tradition, it takes a bona fide bishop with bona fide apostolic succession credentials to order an exorcism. And in order to get the Catholic Church to do it, it's a procedure that can take many months, even years, to arrange, if ever. And she thought, well, I'm interested in this guy because he's a bishop, and I guess he does exorcisms. So she called me. And I asked her what was going on, and it started off with a series of just a string of bad luck, people cutting their fingers off.
Oh, jeez.
Accident. Again, accidents happen. Stuff happens, you know. And but it happened in such a short period of time, and then one of the male teachers came in and announced that he had pancreatic
cancer,
and he only had a it was terminal, but he died within 3 days of announcing it. And then somebody else at work in the office went out with breast cancer. Somebody came walking in the next day with a broken leg on crutches, and it's just it got to the point of where at first they were joking that the school was possessed. And the more that they sort of joked, that the school was possessed, more and more of these unfortunate events happened. Then, in the mornings, the furniture was moved. They would find the
scattered everywhere.
Right, and then. One morning, and this is all in a very short period of time, the electric lights in the ceiling blew up and shattered glass all over.
Wow, a lot of negative energy there.
Yeah, and then they really started. There was a fear factor, and it's almost like the whatever it was feeding on the fear that it was creating, and it kept getting worse. And finally, one of the most beloved little teachers, the youngest little nun, English teacher, and she was the like the pep squad. She was the beloved little teacher. Got on in a car crash on the freeway coming to work.
Serious?
With her baby in the car.
Oh my God! Did they get hurt?
She was trapped in the car, the baby, and she burned to death.
Oh my God! I guess they did get hurt
in the car, and that's when everybody freaked. That's when they got so desperate that they, you know, called the exorcist.
This was a demon of pretty big magnitude, I would guess.
A biblical proportion.
Yes.
And, it seemed like in my own personal life, it was a cosmic moment with my own life, my own karma, my own everything, to have this issue brought to my doorstep. And it seemed like it was just the wrong thing for me to do, to say no.
But did you want to do it?
No.
No, not at all. You just felt compelled to.
I wanted to watch TV that night, you know. And
but they were desperate.
But they were desperate. And it seemed like, I don't want to sound that dramatic, but it seemed like, I'm called to do this. And so I said I would drive up and I would do it that night. She said that she'd meet me at the school and she'd leave the school, let me wander the school all night. And I write about this exorcism in my book, Low Magic.
Were you successful in exorcising the situation?
Yeah, but it was a very, very hard night. And
it's got to be exhausting for you too.
It was. It took about 6 hours. I did stuff in every room of the school, and it's a rather large school, and I more or less purified, banished every room of the school, and I got everything pushed into one room, and in that one room is where I kind of set up the showdown. And but I used it. I figured there was just a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know what the name of this demon was or anything else. So before I went up to the school, I used the pendulum and used Hebrew letters and the Kabbalistic things.
As long as you don't use the Ouija board, Lon.
No, I don't use the Ouija board, but I said, now, what the name of this spirit, you know, is it this letter here? And I had literally Scrabble tiles face down on a tabletop. And I determined what the name of the spirit was. And then once I knew the name of the spirit.
Should you share it with us, or do we not want to know?
Oh, it's in the book. I don't like, I won't.
You won't mention it.
But it's actually, I give a pretty detailed view of it, and what the showdown was really about. And just like I mentioned to you at first, what it came right down to was something I had to exercise from myself.
Right, right. Did you invoke the name of Jesus or Christ or anything? Because in Hollywood, they do that all the time.
No, I didn't.
You don't have to?
Well, that's not my particular spiritual discipline. And so during my invocation, in other words, the deity, the form of the deity that I connect to is sort of more universal Kabbalistic than.
But it worked.
Oh yeah.
You were lucky, or maybe not.
Oh, of course I was lucky. Absolutely.
But you knew what you were doing, though.
Yeah, as much as anybody does.
I thought you had to be a priest to be an exorcist.
Well, I'm a consecrated Gnostic bishop.
Well, all right. I guess that's good enough. Stay with us, Lon. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you. Plus, I want to talk about tarot cards when we come back.